You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Hello and welcome to the Myth TV Cast. My name's Patrick DeVillo, and with me is Dan Fry.
How's it going, Pat?
Excellent. This is our very first episode. We're going to be doing a podcast about Myth TV. We're both users of Myth TV. We really love it as an application. You know, we've used other commercial DVR, PVR / software, and we find Myth TV better. We're going to go through a whole litany of why we use Myth TV, what exactly is Myth TV, what you can do with it. Also, we'll go in future episodes, we'll talk about purchasing equipment for it, what are the best options for you, standard def, high def, satellite over the air. Also,
configuration. How to set everything up, get it running optimal.
How to's. I guess we could start with what exactly is Myth TV. Okay, Myth TV is a digital video recorder. At the heart of it, it's basically a VCR that's, you know, based on computer architecture. You have a TV capture card. You record your shows. You can play back, fast forward. One of the greatest features of Myth TV that I think is one of the top features of Myth TV, when I talk to people who don't use Myth TV, is automatic commercial skipping.
And best feature there is.
That is the best feature there is. You know, what happens is after you record your show, Myth will go, and in the background, it'll go through your recording, and it has some I guess, what are they?
Algorithms.
Yeah, it goes against, and you know, based upon, you know, black space or whatever.
Logos,
mm-hmm. You know, station IDs. Mm-hmm. It'll flag them as commercial breaks, and as you play it back,
automatically jumps over them. Yeah. It's great.
It's beautiful, you know.
But it's so much, Myth TV in general as a whole is so much more than that. It'll catalog your audio, catalog your videos. It'll you can play old, you know, Nintendo games if you can get the ROMs for them. I mean, there are so many different things that it can do that people have built onto it through, you know, throughout the years that it's been around. I can even run my satellite radio through it.
Right, right. The whole thing about Myth TV is it has a plug-in architecture. And some of the base plugins that people have built for it is an audio player. Mm-hmm. You could play files that are on your local machine, mm-hmm. or you could also read files that are shared out over the network, mm-hmm. via Samba or NFS. Mm-hmm. You could also have a video player, same deal, if you have local local directories on your computer or network shares. It'll play back a whole litany of video formats, because at the heart of it, I believe it's mPlayer.
Mm-hmm. So, and it plays everything.
AVIs, OGGs, MPEG-2, MPEG-4, mm-hmm. X264.
Yep.
You name it, it'll play it back.
AVIs, DivX, you name it. It plays it.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the only real limitation with the different video formats is you're limited by your CPU speed on your machine. Mm-hmm. Because when you talk about H.264, especially with HD, it's very CPU intensive. And unless you have a fairly quick machine, it's not going to play back smoothly. But mm-hmm. we'll talk about that in future episodes.
There's definitely some good things coming on the horizon for that.
Oh, yeah. Some of the other plugins, Myth Weather, you can go in and type in your zip code, and it'll go out and grab your forecast, you know, mm-hmm. 3-day forecast, 5-day forecast, radar imaging. Mm-hmm.
That's changed somewhat over the years, too.
Yeah.
I used to be able to just enter in my zip code, and it would populate everything for me, and now I have to set up individual ones specifically.
It seems to now it asks for like your nearest weather station,
mm-hmm. or the airport, you
right,
know, yeah,
right. Whatever, mm-hmm. there's like a weather station that's mm-hmm. tied into their system. What else is there? What are some of the other really awesome plugins that you can do? There's
you want to look at the Apple trailers. It'll stream those right over. There's also a feed. There's also feed. A feed reader, so that you can go in and access all your different feeds, your RSS feeds that are out there. If you want to see what movies are playing in your zip code, you can enter in your zip code in the movie applet and see what all the local theaters have playing. you want to schedule your Netflix queue, you can...
Netflix, right. Yeah. The Netflix plugin is great. If you have a Netflix account, you can go in and log in, and it'll show you what's on your queue. So you can't go in and browse videos and pick them, but it'll let you go in and actually view them. I guess it's some kind of a screen scraper that he uses for that. It goes into the website and pulls it down.
Yeah.
Unless there's some kind of interface. I don't know the whole thing about it.
That's kind of what I do with Sirius Satellite Radio, too, is I just go out, scrape the listings.
Right, you wrote a plugin, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can just go out, scrape the listing. If you have an account with Sirius, I have it in my car, so I automatically have an account. So it just goes out. There, some guys wrote a little player to play that stream over the internet. So I just wrote a little front end to go in and catalog all of the channel listings that are currently available, and then you can go out and just click on it, and it starts playing straight through the auto system. Has a little pop up anytime that the song changes or the station changes or anything like that. So,
right, another great plugin is MythWeb, and what MythWeb is, it's a web based interface to your MythBox. So if you go in from what it is, it has a either Apache or Lighty, you know, web server running on the box, and through a web connection, you go in with an IP address, and then you can go in and go in and basically see what's recorded. You can see your scheduling. You can
schedule something.
Right. You can even actually, with the newer releases of Myth, you can go into your recorded sessions, and it'll play back your recordings, stream back in real time via Flash, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty nice. So conceivably, you can open up your a port on your home's network, come in remotely, say like you're on a business trip or something, and watch your recordings. Mm-hmm. You can also go in and set up recordings that you wanted to do.
Right.
You can delete recordings.
You can set jobs. So if you want to transcode it, I transcode it down to my Nokia N800. I can do that right from the MythWeb interface.
Right. That's very popular. Mm-hmm. A lot of people these days, they have these these internet tablets, or say like an iPod video, that they use, or
you can set up the scripts just to export it out to the appropriate
resolution
and
frame rate, and you can do that. I've done that myself. I've watched some of my Myth recordings on my Nokia as well. I guess talking about like just a history, like I've used DVRs, PVRs from like cable companies and satellite companies. I used
TiVo.
I'd never used TiVo. I've had the cable company ones. I've had the satellite company ones. Mm-hmm. And really, honestly, those boxes tend to be just digital VCRs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, it's integrated to your cable box and your satellite box. And you go into your schedule and you pick it and it records, and that's basically it. The only new thing I've seen with those devices is that I think now you can go in remotely and go in and schedule recordings. That's about
it. Certain companies like Comcast and RCN, which we have here, they don't allow you to remotely go in.
DirecTV just started doing that.
I think Fios does. They allow you to go in. What they are also starting to do, which MythTV has done for quite some time, is allow you to record something in one room and watch it in another room. And MythTV, if you have front ends that are in multiple rooms, you could share. You could have one master back end tell all the other front ends where to look for the video, and you're able to go in and watch it in whatever room you would like. So you could actually have a whole house system set up where you could record. Have a big beefy box sitting in the back room somewhere recording everything, and then all the other front ends throughout the house are just light little boxes that don't take a lot of power or run continually. But whenever you want to, you can just access that box. Watch what you want right over the network. It streams it from the back end to the front ends. And that is, I think Fios is starting to do that now, but MythTV has been doing that for years. Yeah.
Yeah. The first time somebody does a Myth build, usually it's all contained in one box. It's a front end and the back end. The architecture of MythTV is what it is. The back end is where your capture cards are configured. That's where the database sits with the program guide information. That's where the scheduling occurs. Okay, and then the front end piece is the GUIs and the interface, and all the plugins for the different types of applications that you could use for it. Mm-hmm. So the most common setup is someone has a combined front end back end system, and eventually, after a while, speaking from experience, you want to try a distributed system where you have some other front ends around the house. Mm-hmm. Now, my experiences with front ends is that for standard def, you could watch your programs wirelessly over a wireless network. If you're doing standard def, 802.11g. Okay, now for high def, that's not going to cut it.
No.
You either have to have a wired connection. Okay, so for all you people who are going to build a new home or something, make sure you have wired, you know, Ethernet cable going around the house. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you're going to finish a basement, run your cable down. You know, yep. Run plenty of cable all over the place.
Right.
I finished this basement about 2 years ago, and you know, I have network cable going from where my servers and my switches, you know, this corner in the back here where the furnace is, that's where my server room is. And then I have my TV on the other end of the room. I have network cable going across, you know, the beams and stuff. But like an idiot, I didn't run any network cable mm-hmm. upstairs.
Yeah.
Now, my myth box is sitting upstairs in the family room, okay, on the main floor. And down here in the basement, you know, the man cave, I you know, like to watch videos and stuff because I have my high def TV down here. The myth box is hooked up currently. My myth box is hooked up to a standard def TV, a Panasonic. But I can do high def recordings, and I do them sometimes. The myth box, if you know, what'll happen is if you do a recording in high def, your video card should be able to downstream it, you know, downgrade the resolution, go to a standard def TV. And likewise going up too. If you have a standard def recording, you go into a high def, you can set it to either, you know, so that it looks high res, you know, it upstreams it, or keep mm-hmm. it standard def.
Yeah.
You can do it either way. You know, most modern video cards should be able to do that. Now, I guess, you know, the whole thing with Myth TV, as in Linux in general, is when you pick components, you want to make sure you're going to buy something that works.
Right.
That other people are using, that's stable, okay?
They've documented issues they've had with the particular components or anything like that.
Right, right. If you're one of these impulse buyers that likes to go to like get the Best Buy mm-hmm. and just buy something off the shelf, stop.
Yeah.
Do not do that.
Odds are you're not going to find something that works for you from Best Buy anyway.
Yeah, yes. As a word of advice, stay away from ATI. Okay. Yeah. I know ATI video cards in general. You know, they've been around a long time. You know, in Windows, they work okay. They give good Windows driver support. But in Linux, ATI's track record has been nothing short of atrocious.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're going to go with a video card, get NVIDIA.
Definitely.
Okay. Now, NVIDIA is a closed source driver, but they have been supporting the Linux community with very good Linux drivers for years.
Yes.
Okay. Anybody, if you talk to anybody who builds a MythBox, you know, they say, get an NVIDIA video card. Mm-hmm,
definitely.
Okay. Now,
I just bought a new one for mine.
And they're cheap, too.
Yeah.
My MythBox, my current MythBox, I did a decent upgrade on it. I went from a 250 gig hard drive to 1 terabyte drive. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hard drives are cheap. I paid $89 for that 1 terabyte.
Yep.
7,200 RPM serial ATA drive.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're going to be doing high def, and most of us are, that's where it's going. Get at least a terabyte of hard drive space.
Yep.
At the minimum. Okay.
Or some server, you know, some separate box to store everything on. I actually run a RAID system myself for my server, which stores all of my audio files, my, you know, pictures of the family, you know, and that type of stuff. And any DVDs or anything like that I rip, you know, quote.
Backup.
Yeah, backup, yeah. Anything like that is stored on my server in a mirrored RAID, you know, and I make sure that I have that backed up and it's on a backup system and, you know, it's always available for me, so.
Now, you look at the Myth TV site, or you look at websites where people have put together Myth boxes, and they have these insane setups, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. They put a couple $1,000s. You don't need to do that.
No, you don't.
Okay? You can build a fairly robust Myth box, say anywhere between $350 to $500 range.
Probably even less than that.
Yeah.
With some of the components, if you can, you know, kind of combo things together, you know, a processor and a board, and the boards now have HDMI outs on them, and that you can even get you know, if you're still doing standard def, you know, S video outs, you know, you can kind of bundle all of that stuff together and end up saving yourself some money too.
Yeah, I picked up an NVIDIA 8500 GT card. Okay, I paid $45 for that card.
Yeah, I just bought an 8400 silent one. It has.
Yeah, silent, yeah, passively cooled.
Definitely get a silent one when you do. And it was $37 shipped, and I still got a $10 mail-in rebate for it. So,
yeah, and these NVIDIA cards, they usually what they have on there, they have an S video out. So if you want to do standard def, that's the way to go with that. And they also, a lot of the newer ones have HDMI out.
Mm-hmm. DVI or HDMI.
Right,
mm-hmm.
either one. So you can't go wrong with that kind of setup. And less than $50 for a really killer video card.
And it's really all you need. You don't need, you know, a $700-$800 graphics card to do the stuff that you're going to do with the Myth TV.
No. A $50 card should be more than sufficient. Mm-hmm. Go with NVIDIA. You'll save yourself a lot of grief. Stick with NVIDIA.
And if you're still doing standard definition, you could probably get away with what the board offers you.
Oh yeah. So. My MythBox, which was mostly standard def until fairly recently, had an onboard NVIDIA 6150 card mm-hmm. with component out.
Right.
Very good quality.
It's what you need. You have a standard def
TV
right
thing,
there.
Mm-hmm. That thing could handle high def MPEG 2s. Mm-hmm. Okay, but it couldn't handle high def H.264 videos.
Right.
Okay, so if you're going to just standard def, something like that is more than sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so really the heart of any PVR DVR system is the capture card.
Exactly.
Okay, this is what's going to take your recordings basically off of either over the air antenna, off your cable box, off of just a coax connection from a cable box, off of a satellite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Honestly, you know, over the years, the one card for standard def, which is the gold standard, is the Hophog PVR 150 card.
Right.
This card has been supported and stabled for years.
Right.
Okay.
I've never had one issue with this card. It's one of the cards that I run in my machine too.
Yeah. My very first MythBox that I did was, let me see, how many years ago was this?
And I think that card too, I bought it on eBay for like $35. I mean, yeah. you can get them for cheap. You know, you don't need to spend a lot of money.
Right. You can get a Hophog PVR card off of eBay for like $30.
Mm-hmm.
New, they probably go for about 50 maybe.
Something like that,
45,
yeah.
45, 50. Mm-hmm. Newegg is a good place to get them.
Yep.
But if you don't need to spend that much, you can go on eBay and get them cheap.
Yep.
You can get two, three of them
yep.
if you'd like. Now, when we talk about capture devices, it really boils down to how you're going to do your capture. Obviously, each source is going to need a separate capture device.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not limited to only one either. You can put as many expansion bays you have in your machine. You can fill them up with capture cards if you like.
Right.
I personally run three of them. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. The Hophog PVR 150, which is the standard F1, is a PCI based card.
Right.
Other types of capture cards, for instance, that are digital cable, CAM, QAM, mm-hmm. They're PCI cards too.
Mm-hmm.
There are other ways to do capturing as well. One method is if you have a cable box and it has a FireWire card, you can do a FireWire
yep,
capture.
That's one of the ones that I run,
that.
Yep.
Now, the limitation of that is it has to be completely open and unencrypted.
Exactly.
For you to
I can't
capture.
Get HBO over FireWire on my cable. And even though I have it at the house, I can't get it on the MythBox.
And that's true also of digital CAM cards.
Mm-hmm.
It has to, the cable signal has to be unencrypted.
Unencrypted.
Now, a lot of providers, what they do is they either give you just your local network affiliates mm-hmm. in the clear. Okay. Some will block out everything. Some will give you some open. It varies. It mm-hmm. really varies. Now, you can also do over-the-air. A lot of people do over-the-air high-def captured,
mm-hmm.
okay? And the quality is phenomenal.
Right.
Okay, now, with the digital transition here in the United States, you're going to need a converter box.
Mm-hmm.
You can get them for fairly low cost. The government's issuing coupons.
Right.
If you have cable or satellite, you're not going to need to go that route.
Right.
It's only for over the air, really, that you need that.
Right.
You're also going to need a digital antenna. You can go to Radio Shack and get them pretty cheap.
I think they're like $40 or whatever.
Right. They're very, very affordable. Some other capture devices, Dan. What else can we talk about? We could talk about the Silicon Dust
yep.
HD Home Run,
yep.
which is a standalone embedded device that connects to your network. As long as it's connected to the network, you can do over-the-air as well as digital cable.
I think it's got two inputs in there.
It's a dual yeah. tuner setup. Mm-hmm. That box goes for about $160, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming down
they
in
have,
price.
They've come down quite a bit.
Yeah, that device is very well supported in Myth.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Well, in the future, the device that's going to be the next gold standard, in my opinion, is going to be the Hophog PVR 1212 high-def H.264 capture box.
And that's for component.
Right. What it is a lot of providers, cable, satellite, they encrypt their signals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what that means is you're going to have either a cable box or a satellite box
right.
to record off of that. If it's going to be HD, okay, the only way to do that is via the component outs. Okay. HDMI has HDCP, mm-hmm. HDCP 5C encryption on
it. Right.
Okay. So that's an issue. So you won't be able to do...
You'll either be able to see portions of it and it'll get like a downgraded signal, or you'll be able to... Or you won't see it at all.
Yeah. So the best way to do it is component out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, component out is high def.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a high def TV down here. I have a Hitachi, and I have a cable box, a digital cable box that does high def. I also have an HD DVD player. Yes, I was one of those people that bought it. I paid $150 for it. Okay, and then after the so-called high def video format war was over, I bought it from Amazon. They gave me also a $50 coupon.
Yeah.
So now I have a nice upscaling DVD player that also happens to play HD DVDs, the dozen that I've got for free when I bought the thing. So that's what that is.
I think that's one area where Myth is not going to be able to help you out, is you're not going to be able to play any current HD DVDs and Blu-ray discs.
Well, that goes back to Linux in general.
Yeah, okay. Linux in general does not have the decryption support in there.
Not yet.
Yeah. People go in and hack the code every now and then, and they're able to break it, but as they keep trying to thwart this, they will, you know, that will eventually stop working. So you might be able to play some older Blu-ray DVDs at this point because the encryption keys are known, but otherwise anything newer is most likely going to either take a couple of months for the next crack to come out, or you're just not going to get to it.
I'm sure that'll change in the future.
I hope so.
You see Blu-ray drives coming down in price. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only a matter of time until that happens.
Yeah.
But back to what I was talking about, HDMI versus component out. Honestly, the quality is negligible.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see the difference on my TV. I don't have a 1080p. I have a 1080i TV, but I can't see any difference. To me, it looks the same.
Mm.
So component out is a good way to capture. Now, the thing with the Hotpog PVR 1212 box is that it's currently not supported in a stable version of MythTV.
Right, but it's coming.
It's coming. It's coming in the next version, which is going to be 0.22.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that is a major overhaul.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot to it. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk about that in future episodes. You know, some of the things that are going to be happening in the next version of Myth is it's going to be based on Qt 4, which is huge. If anybody knows anything about programming, you know, what Nokia has done with Qt going from the 3 series to the 4 series, it's a big jump.
Yeah.
You know, it the applications run faster. It's a beautiful widget set. It's going to be real nice.
All the transitions and all the flash is going to be there, basically. So.
Yeah, it's going to be real nice. It's going to be real nice. The other thing about the PVR 1212 box is that the driver currently is not in the Linux kernel. You have to currently compile it yourself. It's pretty easy to do. Mm-hmm. It takes about 5 minutes. But in the next major Linux kernel release, 2.6.30, it will be in there.
Yep.
So you just plug it into your MythBox, and the driver should work.
Yep.
Okay, and hopefully the next release of MythTV, I don't know. You talk to the Myth devs, and they say, you know, the question is, when's the next release coming out?
I'm trying to find a valid roadmap out there. Right?
Yeah, they'll say it's ready when it's ready.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think before the end of the year, it'll be out.
Yeah.
The question is, when is it going to be out? This summer? Is it going to be out in the fall?
Right.
So I think by the end of the year, we'll see the next release.
Mm-hmm.
22 will be out. And that's going to be a massive, massive change. I guess let's talk about a little bit of MythTV-specific Linux distributions.
Okay,
back in the day, the very first time I did a MythTV setup, somebody had written a how-to. Jared Wilson, guy's name is.
I did the same one.
Okay, based on
Fedora
1, I think it was the very first one. And that's what I did. I did it on an 800 megahertz machine, okay, and I think with 512 meg of RAM, maybe even 256 meg of RAM. Okay, I had a Hotpog card in there, single card, standard F, and it worked very well.
Yep.
Very, you know.
At the time, I was doing FireWire and following his guide as well, and that's what I did. It worked great.
Right.
Fedora kind of gets on my nerves, though. So.
Well, that's a whole different issue.
Yeah, yeah.
You talk about, you know, Linux distributions. Yeah. You know, there's camps of distributions people. You know, they're Fedora people. They're Debian people or Ubuntu people or Slackware people.
Right.
Gentoo, you know. Mm-hmm. It runs the gamut. It's the same thing, to a lesser degree, with MythTV. But what to base a MythTV install on, one distribution.
I made a progression. I went from Fedora. I did a Gentoo one, and then Mythbuntu. Well, I actually ran NotMyth then for quite a long time, and then I saw, well, I'll give this Mythbuntu one a try, and that's what I had been running since, although considering switching on the next time I rebuild it.
Right. So basically, you just mentioned some of the Myth-specific distributions. Mm-hmm. The other one is Mythdora, which is
another Fedora-based one.
Well, actually, one of the guys involved is Jared Wilson, the guy who did the original Fedora Myth how-to.
Right.
He's part of that project, and there's some other main devs involved with that. There's, as Dan has said, there's Mythbuntu, which is based on Ubuntu. Then there's Not Myth, okay, which is Cecil Watson. It's a Debian-based distribution, and he built his own Myth-specific Linux distribution.
Mm-hmm.
He's transitioning away from Debian. His next release is called Arsenix, and he's changing the name from Not Myth to Linhess. And he's changing the base from Debian to Arch Linux, mm-hmm. which is a pretty big change, you know. Arch Linux, I've run Arch Linux on and off for a number of years now, and I'm a big fan of that. Arch appeals to a lot of, like, the Slackware, Debian. It's kind of, when I talk about Arch Linux, I say it's in the sweet spot between Debian, Slackware, and maybe Gentoo, not so much. It's a binary distribution, mm-hmm. but they pack the latest and greatest in there.
Yeah.
It's really easy to build packages. I'm a huge fan of Debian-based distributions.
Me too.
I love apt-get. I love all the packages that are available. Mm-hmm. Debian, Ubuntu, the repositories. There's so much applications that you can pick from.
Right.
And it's fairly up-to-date, well, at least with Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Debian recently had a release, and they're pretty up-to-date right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of those. To me, by him doing that, he's going to a really, really fast base. Mm-hmm. He's going to a very, very fast, light base. Mm-hmm. Some of the other things that Cecil's done with R6 is instead of using Apache, he's using Lighty for the web server, and that's really fast. He uses Fluxbox, as he did with previous versions of Not Myth, which is a very nice, lightweight window manager.
Right.
And you know, it's really fast. Now, with R6, with Linhess R6, it's still considered beta. It's not final release yet. I've been running it for about 2 months now, and I've been pretty happy with it. There's still a few little things, you know, that are not quite there, but mm-hmm. I'd say it's about 95% there, and I've been pretty happy with that. Previous to that, I was running Mythbuntu for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things I like about Mythbuntu. You know, it comes with Ubuntu.
Right.
They were using XFCE, which is one of the lighter desktops.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty nice. There are some things with Mythbuntu that got on my nerves when I ran it. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we were just talking about before we started recording was DVD export.
Right. That mine has just stopped working altogether
yeah.
on me, and I'm not sure why. Yeah. So.
And there are other little mm-hmm. niggling things. Like, for instance, the MythWeb, for me, I had to jump through a few hoops to get mm-hmm. that working properly. Now
mine just runs slow, my MythWeb.
Now, you were running what, 810, 804?
810.
Yeah, I was running 804 for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, it was a pretty good experience. I was pretty happy with it. One of the things that I noticed about it was that the longer that I had it, it seemed to get a little progressively slower.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was.
I have an issue now with the Myth front-end real.real process. It tries to eat up both my cores and my CPU.
It's weird.
You watch one recording and all of a sudden it skyrockets and say commercial flagging will take 3 days for a half hour recording. So
I think out of those three, mm-hmm. you know, you're good with any three of them.
Yeah.
You know, check out Mythdora, mm-hmm. check out NotMyth/Linhess, mm-hmm. and also Mythbuntu. All three of them are all good choices.
Yep.
They make setting up Myth a lot easier. Back in the day, you know, Myth TV was a little bit of a chore mm-hmm. to get everything working properly. I remember back in the days, you know, I had to compile my driver for mm-hmm. my hotbox card.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot more tedious. It literally took days to get everything working. Now, honestly, you can get the base functionality working. If you
yeah.
research your parts that you're using and you buy them and you follow the guides, you could literally get your system up and running within an hour or two.
I can get a Mythbuntu install in literally 25 minutes,
yep.
fully configured in an hour.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's it. I mean, with what used to take me, you know, a weekend, you know, or even longer than a weekend initially, now takes me an hour. And
yeah.
I have three capture cards in there. They're all, they scan all their channels and they connect it to the network, pulling down all of their data. Everything is done very, very quickly.
Yeah, it's really easy. I was very impressed by Linhess, some of the things that were supported out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was supported out of the box that some people have had problems with Myth TV in general has been remote support.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, again, with remotes, go by what people are using and mm-hmm. what's reported to work well.
Right.
I have actually a Microsoft Blaster IR receiver, okay, with a remote
me
that
too.
It came
me
with.
Me too, yeah.
You got the same one as me.
Yeah.
Goes for $28.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with that. Mm-hmm.
It's just them. It's not Microsoft Phase.
It's Philips.
And yeah. Microsoft brands it. But it runs. I mean, it is supported very well. You can go in and configure it if you want to. If you want to change the default mappings, you can go in and do that very easily. And it just works. I actually map it so that a Logitech Harmony remote will, you know, rebroadcast the Philips code so that everything works correctly through the Logitech Harmony. Then it controls all my equipment for me.
Right, with Mythbuntu and Linhas, out of the box remote works, no problems.
Yep.
Now I wasn't crazy about a lot of the default mappings that these guys do. Mm-hmm. So me as an experienced MythTV user, I back up the key files that we need to do. Mm-hmm. In future episodes, we're probably going to go through maybe some of the key files that you want to back up once you have everything set up properly.
Yeah.
Another thing that used to be a pain in the ass with Linux in general was video card support. Mm-hmm. Getting your video settings tweaked out all properly. This was more of an issue with standard def TVs, mm-hmm. okay? But with high def TVs, that really is not so much of an issue.
Nope.
Because a lot of times these high def TVs, to a computer, it's recognized as a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
It knows what the frequencies to set it at,
right.
What the available resolutions are by default. That has come a huge long way.
X has come a long way in this
time
frame.
It's so much easier to do it.
It knows how to auto-discover the monitors, and that process is just very, very easy now.
Yeah, it's really simple nowadays. What are some of the other things that we need to configure? One of the big things about MythTV is your guide information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here in North America, we use a service called Schedules Direct, which was put together by some of the key developers from the MythTV project, along with some other developers from a few other projects,
mm-hmm.
to address this issue. I remember back in the day, there used to be there's a service. It's actually still out there called Zap2It.
I think they actually buy from Zap2It.
Yeah, well,
it's just not open. Zap2It's not open to the public anymore.
Zap2It is this metadata company that goes out and gets all this information about TV shows on all different cable, satellite, over the air, local areas. Okay, these guys they basically just aggregate all this information,
right.
And then they sell this information through a lot of the cable companies, to the satellite companies. Most you know, providers, they're getting their data from Zap2It, not for nothing.
Right.
Okay, so back in the day, we used to get this information for free.
Right. Not so anymore.
Used to go to the Zap2It site, and you would get an ID for free, and basically you would be able to pull in all your information for nothing.
Yep.
And it was like this for years. Okay, what happened, what I heard, was that there were certain people out in the community that were building commercial myth boxes and other DVR, commercial DVR software applications that were using Zap2It's feeds.
Right.
Okay. And they were not kicking any money. They weren't negotiating any service contracts with Zap2It.
Right.
And they were very specific Zap2It. When you signed up, it said, this is for home use only, no commercial applications. If you're going to be doing commercial stuff, you got to contact us and we got to negotiate a contract with them.
Right.
So I can understand they are providing a service. They're aggregating all this information and they're providing XML. I think they're XML feeds, what they were doing. So basically what happened was people were going out making money and using these Zap2It feeds. So Zap2It got a little annoyed and basically announced, you know, within a few months, we're shutting off all free feeds. Anybody who has a free feed, you know, we're turning it off. So the MythTV devs, along with some other devs from other projects, got together and created Schedules Direct. And what they've done is they've gone in to Zap2It, negotiated a contract with them, and they basically provide what we were getting for free for $20
a year. $20
a year. Which is still fairly reasonable price to get your information.
Considering if you have a monthly subscription to something like TiVo, where you're paying, what is it, $12.95, I think, a month?
TiVo, I don't know the numbers exactly, but I know what they do is if you do it month by month, it's more expensive. If you do it by yearly or biannually
lifetime,
I don't think they even offer the lifetime subscription.
They stopped
anymore.
And then they came back. I think they might have stopped.
It was like what, like $300? I think at the time they offered it.
I think it was $400.
$400, and it was lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with that was that it was only good to the lifetime of your device.
Right.
So if you had a standard def TiVo and you did the lifetime thing, you got the free subscription. You didn't pay any monthly fees.
Right.
But once that box died, that was the end of that. You had to start paying again.
They didn't allow you to transfer it over.
Let's talk about, you know, we talked a little bit about cable boxes. How about TiVo? You said you've had TiVo before?
Mm-hmm. I've had a TiVo. I've actually had two of them, and one of them did die, so I ended up, I bought the lifetime subscription.
They're nice machines for what they do.
They are, but when you try to start moving on to like a high definition display, they're awful. The original TiVo Series 2s were just awful. Everything was just like a checker box all over the screen. You couldn't make out anything very well from it. They have moved on to high definition boxes and whatnot nowadays, but they also will run you, at least at the time when I was looking into them, they would run you, I don't know, $800, $700, $800. You know, and likewise, we talked about that earlier, is that the cost of building a base Myth TV, you know, machine will cost you, you know, $300, $350, $400. So, I mean, so you're still talking half the price of a TiVo.
Now, a TiVo is basically an embedded Linux box for mm-hmm. the most part.
Right.
The thing that's different about TiVo is there's a layer in there that's proprietary that they've developed in-house that mm-hmm. they keep close. It's a binary blob.
Right.
Now, most people, they don't care about that.
Right.
Okay, a lot of Linux people, they care about that. And mm-hmm. It's an issue with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that TiVo does support that MythTV probably, in Linux in general, will never support is cable cards.
Right.
Okay, cable cards are these like PCM CIA cards that go into your computer, and you could it's basically a cable box that you can watch all your encrypted cable channels with.
Your TV can you can stick one of those or two of those in your TV, and then have access to like the interactive on-demand systems that
right.
that the cable companies provide. But you won't be able to do that with Linux.
Yeah. The whole issue with that, it's DRM.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the cable companies have DRM in mm-hmm. there. And Linux does not play with DRM.
No.
And it's by choice.
Right.
Okay. Now, the TiVo does. Okay, if you're one of these people that just want something easy, you know, you want to go in, plug the box in, hook it up to your cable box or satellite mm-hmm. box, turn it on and just use it. Maybe TiVo is a better choice for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you're someone who's into computers, someone who's into Linux, even if you're not into those,
mm-hmm.
you're someone who likes to take control of how you deal with your media, how you present it with your media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to be able to have multiple recording sources. You want to have a distributed setup in your home.
Right.
Say like you have front ends in your family room, in mm-hmm. your bedroom. You know,
yeah.
MIT TV is expandable.
Yep.
There is a strong community around TiVo. It could do a lot more things that it used than it couldn't do in the beginning.
Yeah, it used to be very limited.
It's pretty nice now, but again, you're paying for the box, and then you're paying for the monthly fees. And it's not cheap.
There are ways around it. You have to kind of break some copy protections and whatnot. But with the TiVo, if I wanted to say record a whole series, you know, a whole season long of one show, and I wanted to then back that up onto a DVD because I really liked it, and I wanted to watch it again and again, I can't do that very easily with TiVo. I have to break copyright rules and copy protection rules. So.
Well, one of the things I like to do with my MythTV, like, you know, normally I'll just record a show.
Mm-hmm.
I'll watch it with my wife, and then we'll delete it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things that I like to keep around.
Mm-hmm.
MythTV is great with doing that. You can export your shows. You could strip out the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
You can re-encode to all different kinds of formats. There
yep.
are different ways to do it.
Right.
Within the front end of MythTV, there's transcode. Okay. You can go in and you can say, okay, I'm going to go in and set the commercial where the commercials are.
Mm-hmm.
You can also, there's a way to do it automated too.
Yeah.
I find doing it manually is actually more accurate,
mm-hmm.
more to my liking than mm-hmm. letting the automatic process do it.
Right.
I like to normally re-encode my videos to XVIDs or DivX.
Mm-hmm.
Lately I've been doing more MP4s using X264.
Mm-hmm. You get a nice tiny file.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and pretty good quality.
You can take a 6 or 7 gigabyte HD file, knock it down to about 300 megs. So.
Yeah, and it's still pretty good quality mm-hmm. with no commercials or nothing.
Right.
The other thing that you could do is you can make export your shows to DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
DVDs are cheap now.
Yep.
You know,
just want to back something up real easily. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, put like, you know, 8-10 different, like, I have two little kids. You
mm-hmm.
do too.
Yep.
You know, you record some of those shows they like to watch, you know, Dora the Explorer.
I was making volumes of Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, you know, for my daughter. So.
Exactly. You put 10, 12 episodes on her, you're
yep.
golden.
Yep.
You can't go wrong. You know, the other thing is that MythTV, when you build a MythBox, it's expandable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you see that your hard drive is too small, go buy another one, throw another
yeah,
one in there.
Exactly.
If you have you get as more advanced users, a lot of people have home servers now.
Mm-hmm.
You could share out your server space, you know, via Samba or NFS.
Mm-hmm.
Works like a champ. For instance, my MythTV setup, what I do is I have a home server here, and my ripped backups are on there from some DVDs. I have some home videos that I have on there. I have all my music, my music collections in there. You know, stuff that I've ripped over the years in all different formats, right. MP3, AUX, FLAX, some WAVs even. Even Windows Media, I think I even heard a couple. My family albums, you know, pictures taken with digital cameras, my scan pictures.
I think I did a count the other day. I'm at the up to 3,700 pictures between just from the time my wife and I were together. Now we have two little kids, so that number has skyrocketed in the last year or 2 years. So
you know, ideally, you can do something like with MythTV. If you have a home server, you keep all your stuff on there. Mm-hmm. You just put a network share out there. You know, when you're doing the setup initially for MythTV, just point it to the network share. Yeah. Boom, import all your files.
Right, and anything, your audio, your photos, and whatnot. Like we said earlier, you can run over a wireless connection very easily. I actually have a wireless and the home networking line, the home phone line networking running through my house as well. So it just runs right off of the existing phone system, and that plays, you know, the music and the photos very nicely. I can get access to those without any issue.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Some other things about MythTV. Myth Game.
Yeah.
Really cool plugin. Mm-hmm. Old school arcade games are supported in Linux. I don't know if they also do it in Windows and Mac, but MAME, I think they do.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a port for Windows.
Yeah. Right. So MAME is the arcade emulator, and it supports those old school arcade games, you know, the classics.
I loved The Legend of Zelda when I was a kid.
Pac-Man, you know, mm-hmm. Joust. Space Invaders, Galaxian.
But for all the platforms, too. You want an Atari 2600, you want, you know, Nintendo, NES. The original Nintendo, you want Nintendo 64, you want the Sega Genesis. I mean, the if you can find the ROMs out there, you can pretty much load them up in your Myth, get a little, you know, $20 wireless controller for it, and you can just play it, you know, as you used to play it, when those ROMs were around in the actual cartridges.
Yes, legally speaking, you're supposed to actually have the cartridges.
Yeah.
If you're gonna have the ROM images, mm-hmm. We won't get into that.
I have to dig through my parents' basement somewhere to see if they're still in the attic.
Yeah, they're in the attic, my parents' house. Exactly, but that's a really cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the really impressive things is if I have a family event and I have company over. I fire up the MythTV, man. I start playing some videos on there. Mm-hmm. I show them. I have some music playing.
Slideshows of all the pictures you've taken. Yep.
They love it. They're mm-hmm. like, "What is this? Is that a TiVo?" Mm-hmm. Usually, like, "No, that's not a TiVo."
And then you say you built it too, so that just kind of presses them even more.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, if you're able to like do upgrades to your computer, put new memory in, put a new DVD drive or something, you could put together a MythBox fairly easy.
Yeah.
Now, you can buy a big honking tower case, you know, just for your first time build. But a lot of times what people do is they get what's called home theater PC cases.
Right.
And these cases can get very expensive.
Yes, they can.
You can go into low end, you know.
For as low as, I think, like 40, 50 bucks, you can find a low end one.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. Small form factor, mini ATX, micro ATX form factor box, you know, up to, God, crazy, $300, $400, $500. Boxes.
Even more. They're ones that have, you know, built-in
on-screen
LCD
touch
displays.
Yeah.
Displays, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You
they're
can get
nice.
Really crazy. My Myth Box case is a Cooler Master that I paid about $65, $70 for. Mm-hmm. And I've had three separate builds in that using that same mm-hmm. case.
Yeah.
It's a small form factor case. It looks like a stereo component.
Yep. That's the piece that lasts me, you know, the longest. I actually had to rebuild all of mine last August because of I think I got a power surge and my board went. But so I ended up rebuilding everything inside of there, but the case stayed. You know, I had a good silent power supply. I always make sure to invest in a good silent, you know, fan, you know, heat sink combination for the processor, and the video card is always silent. I try to make this thing as whisper quiet as possible.
Yeah, one of the big things that bit me recently was MythBox, I had a cheapy power supply that I think I paid about $25 for.
Mm-hmm.
The thing started getting really noisy on me all of a sudden. So I went and I spent about $50, $60, and mm-hmm. I got something that's a little quieter, a little more low powered. You know, they label it green, whatever.
Mm-hmm. You don't even notice that it's running. You know, I mean, it's great when they're as silent as they are.
Now, one of the things about MythTV is you could set it up so that if your hardware supports it, so that it wakes up and goes to sleep when you have recordings.
Mm-hmm.
So the machine will be off. Oh, there's a recording at 3 o'clock in the morning. It powers itself up, starts recording, does a recording, does the commercial flagging. Half hour, 45 minutes later, it shuts off.
Yep. Waits to check, does a check to see if anything else needs to happen in a some window of time and then just says no, okay, shuts down.
Yeah, that whole thing is very dependent on what your hardware is and whether or not supported.
Mm-hmm.
So again, research your hardware.
Right. There are forums. There are hardware compatibility lists for Linux. Pretty much, if it's supported under Linux, it will work. So if you're able to go in and find what you have or what you're planning on buying on these lists, and you can see whether or not yes they are supported, I got okay support, or no they're not supported, you'll be able to make better decisions about that then.
Honestly, for a bare minimum myth build, I would say you would need at least 512 mega RAM. RAM is cheap. For instance, I bought two gig sticks for $25.
Yeah.
So throw 2 gig in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reasonable size. I think, like I said, I said a minimum of 1 terabyte of hard drive space nowadays. Go with at least 2 gig of RAM.
Yep.
A lot of times people do front end only systems, and they actually do flash now.
Yeah. They stream it off.
They get like an 8 gig flash card. Mm-hmm. They put like a front end install on there, a silent system.
Yep.
You know, if you're going to be
no moving parts whatsoever.
Yeah, but what a front end system basically is, the front end is not going to be doing any recording whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
What it is is just a GUI front end. You turn it on, it connects over the network to your back end system where the database and all your recordings are stored, and you know, it communicates back and forth, and you can watch your shows and do schedule your recordings. It's basically all the functionality that you can get if it was like a combined box, but you could do it in a smaller, more quieter form factor.
Even hide it. You can hide it and just run a little, a little lead somewhere so that your IR can capture that. So you don't even have to know that there's one sitting there.
Right. So what we're going to do in future episodes, Dan, I think, is we're going to talk about things in more detail.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go in and we'll talk about doing an actual build. You're looking to do a new build. We were talking about upgrading your system, right?
Yep. I'm going to upgrade in the next couple of weeks.
I recently did a pretty brisk upgrade of my system. Got a new video card, new hard drive, more memory, new power supply.
Yep.
So, it's still pretty fresh in the mind. I think the next episode we're going to go into detail doing a build.
Yep.
What's involved. And you know, I'm somewhat of a frugal guy. I don't want to spend through the lungs. You know, not everybody can spend, $2,000 on a system.
Right.
You don't have to spend $2,000 on a system.
No, you don't.
You can get a real kick-ass system for about $500.
Right.
You can get a lower-end system for about $350.
Right.
You know, fully functional, does everything. You know, we'll go into detail on that. You know, maybe we'll talk about, we'll talk about video cards, what the low ends is now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about the capture devices, what they're going for, how much they're selling for. We'll do a budget.
Right.
We'll talk about, what else? Game controllers. The TV is not really in the realm of it because your home theater setup is your home theater setup.
Right.
My box upstairs, the motherboard that I have has an optical out.
Mm-hmm.
So any of my, like when I'm listening to music, I turn my receiver on and I hear my music piped over through the receiver, through my surround sound system.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Yeah, it's real nice. It's, I like it a lot. What else did I do? I play those old school video games on there.
Mm-hmm.
I got the family albums on there. I got the old home videos on there.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some archived videos on there. I got my Myth TV recordings.
Right.
I got my weather.
No lack of media at all.
Yeah. So I still have to say the number one feature is the commercial script.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, I actually, unless it's like a sporting event now, I don't watch anything live. I pretty much wait till it records, wait till it flags all the commercials, and I just sit there and, I can get through things much quicker. I'm kind of, more into like getting things done quicker. I mean, I got two little kids running around and whatnot. So if I can get things done quicker, I'm all for that.
Right. That 1 hour program is really 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That half hour is really 20 minutes.
Right.
So in that 2 hour time, you can watch more shows.
Exactly.
I know one thing people do. Sometimes they have like a faster playback speed.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with this?
I've heard of people doing that. I haven't done it myself though.
Yeah. I played around with it a little back, a few years back. And what it is they'll do playback at 1.5 speed,
mm-hmm.
so that 40-minute show can be watched in like 30 minutes.
Right.
And they say that the audio doesn't get altered too much.
Oh no,
it does slightly though. I think. I don't particularly like that. Some people love doing that.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah. No, I've never tried it. I want to still watch it for what it is. I don't want to remove some of that stuff out.
Now,
of
it. Does TiVo have commercial skipping?
You can code the controller like
with a hack.
Yeah, there's a hack for the controller, but it doesn't actually skip the commercials. It gives you like a 30-second fast forward skip.
And you can change it to like 2 minutes or 1 minute or something.
Yeah, you can configure that.
Cable boxes, There's no commercial.
There never will be.
There never will be. Mm-hmm. The closest thing you'll get is a 30-minute skip.
Yeah.
And there are ways to do that on some...
Even the TiVos, though, like when you do start fast-forwarding commercials, a lot of the times they'll pop up a commercial on your... You know, because based on, you know, either previous viewing habits or some other type of demographic that you happen to fit into, it's going to try to target that towards you.
That, you know, that leads into very nicely what I was going to bring up is that the commercial PVR, DVR systems... They're in cahoots with the multimedia mm-hmm. networks, you know, Motion Picture Association, whoever.
Right, right.
They work with them. They work out deals with them, okay? So they want you to watch commercials. Mm-hmm. They fund these bogus studies were saying that people will enjoy their TV viewing more
yeah.
if there's commercials in there and they're watching commercials. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard.
Oh,
in
me too.
Life.
Me too. Yeah.
Who are you trying to kid?
Yeah, I don't want to see that. What back when you had what 3, 6, and 10 or whatever, you know, the three main channels.
ABC, NBC, CBS.
Yeah, and you would only be able to you would only ever see commercials what. Before and after a show. I mean, this is
back
before
in the day.
This is before I was
born.
Yeah,
the 60s.
So,
we're talking like the 60s, yeah, so, the 50s, the 60s, and even the early 70s. A TV program would come on. I Love Lucy has been brought to you by...
Yeah, and your public system would do the commercials at that point. That's why it was all free, and now they've tacked on every
20
every
minutes
cost.
Of commercials in a one-hour broadcast, which is insane.
Yep.
And the other thing is there are other DVR systems. Like one is Sage TV. Mm-hmm. Sage TV is a Java-based system, and you can install it pretty much. I think they have a Windows that you can put it on, and they also have a Linux version that you can put on. But they nickel and dime you to death for everything. Mm-hmm. I think the base system for that is like $70. And if you want to do a front end, they charge like an extra $20, $30. You have to get like a front end license set up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
I haven't looked into Sage TV.
I've looked a little bit into it. You know, one of the other topics that we'll get into is extenders, these small form factor embedded devices where you can hook into your PVR system.
Right.
You can do it with MidTV. Sage TV does allow you to do that. They have their own box. And it's like it's a whole integrated thing. The whole thing with like a Sage TV type system is they're going to nickel and dime you to death.
Mm-hmm.
$20 here, $15 there, $30 there. Some people don't care.
Yeah.
So what? I pay, you know, $300-$500 in software fees.
Right.
I don't think you should.
No, me neither.
No, the MidTV community is awesome. The project was started by Isaac Richards. We have nothing to do with the project. We just want to say that as a disclaimer.
Yeah.
You know, but we're longtime MidTV users. We love the application. Those guys have done a fantastic job with the project. You know, they're doing great things going forward, and all the credit to these guys. It really is a testament to the power of open source software.
Right.
You know what MidTV is and what it's become.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Yep. Look at any of the communities out there, in either Mythbuntu or Linhess or any of those. The communities are quite large, and they are all fans of the same base product that's out there. So.
Yeah. Speaking of resources, the very first place that anybody who's interested in MidTV should go to midtv.org.
Mm-hmm.
This is the official website of the MidTV project. You can go in there. You can see some screenshots, feature lists.
There's a great wiki on how to
phenomenal
do different
wiki.
Things.
There's all different hardware configurations in there. There's user notes. There's a manual on how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent place. There's some good mailing lists. I'm a regular on the MidTV users mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
That's another good community location. Also, the specific to the Myth TV Linux distributions,
mm-hmm.
NotMyth has a very good forum. You go to NotMyth, K-N-O-P-P, myth.net, or you can also go to Linhess, Linhes.org. It's the same. He's got both websites up now. From there, you can go into the user forums. Excellent community. Very good documentation, how-tos. That's a good resource. Also, Mythbuntu is, I think, officially supported
under the Ubuntu forums.
Ubuntu forums, mm-hmm. And there is a very good wiki. They also have some very good wikis.
Yes,
too.
They do. Mm-hmm.
Both of us have actually contributed to those
exactly.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
You did the FireWire stuff.
Yeah, I did some stuff with FireWire a while back.
Did you do anything with the satellite radio too?
I just posted that on the MythTV wiki itself.
Right. And I did
that was dealing with like the base menuing system. And
right.
So, I guess.
Right. And I did a write up for using a Motorola DCT 700 digital cable box is what I use on my standard FTV. I wrote up that one.
That's the blaster for that.
Yeah. Setting up the blaster. And that's a little extra step. It's not, you know, overly complex.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go into more detail in a future episode about setting up blasters, you know, controlling your set-top box, cable box, satellite box, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go into detail via FireWire, via an IR blaster, a serial adapter. Mm-hmm. There's all different ways of doing it. And that's definitely a topic. What other topics do you want to cover in the future, Dan? I want to do something on exporting out to handheld devices such as the Nokia N800.
Definitely, yeah.
And I
do something a little nice with that. As I export out, I provide an RSS feed for all my exports and a little cron job to delete them after 3 days, because anytime my Nokia N800 would sync up, you know, to get its next day's worth of podcasts, a new video comes down with it, and I can just drop it right on there real easily. I don't have to do any manual intervention in that way.
I want to definitely talk about, we're going to cover builds, specific things, mm-hmm. Doing remotes, IR blasters, that kind of thing. I want to talk about extenders at some point.
I'm also looking into doing some, getting access to, some serial connections to the different components that I have, so that I can actually control all of this information myself. I won't need something like a Logitech Harmony to say turn on my receiver, turn on my TV. So that I'm looking to do some coding like that coming up as well.
Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know, Logitech Harmony remote is one of these uber fancy control everything remotes. Mm-hmm. I have one too. I have the 800?
880.
Yeah. Harmony 880, which is real nice. Mm-hmm. I think I paid about $150 for it. You say that to someone and you're like, what, $150 for a remote? What a
remote
ripoff.
Control, yeah,
this thing could do everything.
It can. I've been happy with it, but mine has seen better days, and I can't see.
Well, it doesn't help when your kids are throwing it across
exactly,
the room.
Exactly, exactly. This is why I can go with a cheaper solution, and if my daughters happen to bust it or whatever, I don't care.
You'll leave out the Microsoft remote that you bought for $28.
Exactly, yeah.
To destroy it, just pick up the Harmony and it still works.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'll go into some topics. And extenders are really cool. That's like a real future thing that's starting to come down.
Right.
You have these, these small form factor devices.
They can even, PXE them over the network, so you don't even need to have a drive in them whatsoever.
Yeah, I have one of these boxes. It's the Hoppog MVP, which is kind of an old box already. Mm-hmm. It's standard F only, and it only does MPEG 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And MP3s, I think it plays back.
Yeah.
And there's a project out there called... Media, was it MVP?
Media MVP, I think it was.
MVP MC. And what they did is they basically came up with a new firmware replacement that lets you use it as a Myth TV front end. And I've used that for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. And it's nice, And I also have a popcorn arrow box that doesn't actually integrate tightly with Myth TV, mm-hmm. but you can watch Myth TV recordings through it. And
right.
I'll go through that in a future episode.
Right.
So I think this has been a pretty good first episode.
I think so too.
We're going to be doing we're looking to do this for about 1 hour episodes.
Every other week.
Every
or so.
Other week, biweekly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you guys have feedback, we have a website now.
Yep. You can reach us at mythtvcast.com. You can also email us directly. I'm Dan at mythtvcast.com, and Pat is Pat at mythtvcast.com.
So if you have questions related to Myth TV, send them in. Some comments, questions, suggestions. We appreciate it. I love Myth TV. I'm really looking forward to doing this show going forward.
Me too.
And it should be good. Myth TV, some people are really intimidated by it. You shouldn't be. It should be a fun thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a home project.
Right.
If
you're into DIY type stuff, this is definitely a project. This is definitely something for you.
If you're into computers, mm-hmm. if you're into home theater, definitely give it a shot. If you're one of these people who want something simple, go rent the cable company DVR.
Right.
Go buy a TiVo.
Right.
This is for people who want something more, who are more demanding, who want total control over their media, who want to be able to expand their media device mm-hmm. playback, who want a home theater set up. This is for people who want more.
Right.
And who want commercial skipping.
And Pat and I both want more. So.
Yeah, I'm into it. So, going forward, we're looking forward to covering all these topics, and it should be a real good time. We really appreciate everybody taking the time to listen to us for our very first episode. And looking forward to some many more in the future. Thanks. Take care.
See you.